This is CliffCentral.com.
We're well into the year. There's so much happening already that it doesn't feel like many of us even had a holiday. But the communications, marketing, and advertising public relations landscape is always changing. And here in South Africa, it's more exciting than it's ever been, I think. Sitting at the helm of watching and making some of these changes is one of the main actors in that world. She is Sandra Gordon. She's deeply involved in that industry. She's got experience in media, advertising, branding, communication, public relations, and publishing. Many years of experience there. And this morning, she'll help us discuss and shed some light on this intriguing and challenging industry. Currently CEO of the Iconic Group, a savvy collection of entrepreneurial companies. She's got wide experience, as I've already mentioned, and served on the board of Primedia Limited, CEO of Sasani Limited. She's also served on numerous industry boards and committees. She really is in the center of it. Sandra Gordon, it's a pleasure to see you. How are you?
It's lovely to see you, Gareth. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. I had to wake you up this morning and drag you into Rivonia to talk to us. But the introduction that I gave is I don't think, inaccurate in that there's change everywhere.
More seismic than I've ever known in my 30-plus years in the business. The media in particular has changed so dramatically that it's had a profound effect on all the industries that support it, that live on it, that rely on it, and I don't see it settling anytime soon.
So to give people who may not be as au fait with how the media has always worked, it's really been driven by advertising money. You know, the media business has been where you connect advertisers and audiences.
In a nutshell, that's it. And the main business model is advertising revenue, supported, of course, by subscriptions like on television and to magazines, but largely, predominantly by advertising, yes.
So how has that changed? I mean, at what level has it changed? Where is the money going now? Who are the people who are able to take advantage of what's happening with that money? And what is happening to traditional media businesses?
It's just shifting. It's not moving away, because the biggest slice of a marketing budget is your media spend. It's just that the media landscape is shifting, so marketers are finding it incredibly difficult to make their way through this maze of new media that's coming up, and the shift from what you might call older media types, which is largely print, to more modern digital-based media that is highly measurable, or so they claim. So they've also gone through a stage of not understanding the numbers that are thrown at them by, let's say, people who perhaps haven't had the right objective, which is to give the true numbers,
mm-hmm.
as one would with radio, because you have RAM and TAM measurement. With magazines and newspapers, you have audited circulation measurements. That whole digital landscape has moved from and has become much more sophisticated, much more measurable than it was, say, a decade ago. So during that decade, where a lot of marketers were very unsure about, should we put our money here, they were putting tiny bits,
almost dipping their toe in.
At the same time, boards of directors spied the marketing department as probably the last bastion of an area they hadn't put a lot of emphasis on in terms of ROI.
Right.
So if you're in a business and you're in
operations, ROI, return on investment.
Return on investment of your RAND, how to make that buck work, they spied that and said, where are the measurements here? Most of it, you know, a lot of businesses are run by chartered accountants. And they say, why can't we measure the spend more effectively? Millions, in fact, billions, over 50 billion a year is being spent in South Africa on advertising. And that's a big chunk in anybody's game. And it tends to have grown over years. It hasn't ever really stagnated. It's just shifted because it is effective. So there's been that change, which has affected the whole industry, all the media. It's been probably one of the most interesting times I can recall.
So you're not opting out anytime soon, because someone with your experience, having watched this evolve, you must have a real interest in still being a part of it and in still having some influence on it, or certainly trying to understand it. It helps to have the experience that you've got, because you can see things in the big picture rather than in small segments.
Yes, we write about it a lot on our site called The Media Online. We have a lot of stories about how the market's shifting. And I, too, have found my entire pattern of viewership, listenership, touch points have dramatically changed, and I am not a millennial, as you can see. So I have to adapt to whatever's going around me, and I think it happens so quickly that consumers of media talk so often or describe it as so many messages coming them at any one time.
But really, it can all be distilled into content and consumption.
Absolutely.
And those are not sexy terms. They're not as mysterious as viewership, readership, listenership, messaging. Those things that have been the buzzwords of the media business up to now have really been disabused of their emperor's clothing. They're now walking around as content and as consumption. And no matter where and when and how you're involved in the media business now, those things, as you already point out, are essentially measurable. But they're also things that now have a particular rand value, which they didn't necessarily have before, not just in terms of audience, but in terms of what the media company's delivering. And if they're not the creator of that content, then whoever is being held to account for those.
Well, every industry works on lots of the financial industry has a lot of acronyms, as the IT industry does. What our industry does, I believe, because there's a lot of advertising in there, is they have a lot of fun branded wording to describe what they're up to. So it has been a bit of obfuscation, I'm sure. But you're correct. It's like any business. Every business is in the business of distribution. You cannot get away with it. And so is media, whether it's distributing content in the terms of advertising or written and owned and, shall we say, independent content. It requires a distribution channel. And, for instance, Cliff Central is a distribution channel. It's distributing content to people who consume it. So content has become a lot more crucial. If you see the United States models, the European models, it's not that advanced from South Africa and where we sit, but probably a year, 18 months in terms of that emphasis on content. And then on our side, of course, because it's a much smaller economy and we haven't had the most robust one over the last couple of years, a lot of people have cheapened their content offering. And I'm not going to specifically say what media type, but there has been a lessening of care and control over the quality of content that's distributed. And then becoming increasingly difficult to work out what is fake news and what isn't. And I can tell you that I get fooled at least once a week by a video I see and it looks real to me.
But that's honest of you, because most people won't admit that. They think that they're beyond the clutches of fake news. We just had a fascinating discussion over Jacob Zuma's Twitter account and what's going on at Basasa. And it's very easy to fall into the narrative and to believe something that confirms your worldview, which is really what a lot of media are trying to perfect at the moment. It can win you elections if you're a politician. It can put stories out there that are useful from a strategic point of view, but not necessarily true. So there's danger, and you admitting that, I think, is big, because a lot of people think that they're beyond that stuff, and they're not.
Well, that used to be the preserve of the typical spin doctor, the high top level of the public relations industry. That's precisely what they used to do. And did it extremely well, however they did it. And now you can do it, and I can do it. In fact, anybody with a camera or microphone or a pen can do it, or a computer. So it really has become the domain of the consumer to play with it, which of course messes with the real messages that marketers and others wish to convey.
But it's also in a period of flux, so we're going to discover credibility along the way. It's a process. It's not just an immediate thing, which means, of course, that we're going to have to do a little bit of heavy lifting in the meantime. There's going to be weighing up of what's valuable, what isn't, trying to find out who really has influence and who doesn't, who's worth following and who isn't. There are lots of things here that are still up in the air, right?
And a lot of challenges for individuals who previously, perhaps, particularly in the media space, held very important positions, perhaps because of the vehicle rather than the individual. And now with influencers coming into the picture, and I'm reading a lot now about how marketers have to be careful of using influencers and paying them an enormous amount of money to try and influence people to their way. So the word influence now has become attached to a lot of things that perhaps it shouldn't.
And as you say, some very negative things.
Yeah, and difficult to measure.
There's a very difficult measurement part to this, but there's also there's this risk of an influencer could end up harming your business rather than helping it.
Quite, and may well be paid to do that. So that adds a little bit of juice to the mix.
Are we talking about negative influence as well?
Yes,
I mean, is this something that...
Doctors have done it.
Your false flag stuff,
yes,
effectively.
Yes, indeed.
Every business is now a media business, though. I mean, this is the interesting thing about 2019 and perhaps the preceding 2 or 3 years, and certainly going forward, this is the way it's going to be. If you're a bank, you never really needed to create your own content or market exclusively to your audience. You let media companies do that stuff for you. Now, a lot of them are taking it in-house, and they're creating their own little silos of communication to their clients, their distributors, their partners, their own ecosystem, their own audience, effectively. This is a big change.
It's a big change, and it's been very slow coming. If you take big banks, for instance, or telcos, they're sitting on massive databases where people like you and I have given them an enormous amount of information about ourselves and a lot of confidential stuff. How much money you have in the bank, how often you use your credit card, what you're doing with your phone, where you are when you're using it, and what you're using it for. And I have so seldom received well-targeted communication from my bank asking me to do something that I hadn't thought of doing through them that would have deepened my relationship with them.
Usually it's spam.
Well, it's either spam or their databases are so deep, so large, and so complex, and so costly to sort out. That there's, I think if you're more nimble, that database is fantastic to use. And once again, that's distribution. They can distribute stuff to me in all sorts of ways, my bank. Privately, through my internet banking operation, where I can have a one-on-one with them, mm-hmm. or so it seems. They're just not using it, I don't think, nearly as effectively as they could. And as soon as you mention databases, or as we said a year ago, big data was very huge mm-hmm. now. It's not so huge now. The big is becoming a little smaller and more manageable. But when you mention to big marketing directors, chief marketing officers, sort out your database. I don't know how many companies I go to and I say, and surely you must have a very good database. Yes, but we haven't worked on it for a while. It's there. We are working on it. It's a little bit old, and I say, hold, about 17 years, so we've got a bit of work to do. And I'm thinking, this database is the most valuable thing that you have, much like the number of listeners that you have is the most valuable thing you have because it's the end of your distribution channel.
There is an ugly side to this, though. The obverse side of the coin when it comes to talking about databases and knowing all this information about your audience and your distribution channels. The bad part of that is that people are effectively reduced to numbers, and we end up doing what broadcasters used to do, try to get the most people most of the time with smaller segments. So we're now breaking them up into – and the danger of this is that people don't like to be perceived that way by marketers. They don't want to be thought of as being in a group. They don't want to, I'm getting an ad about a microwave because I'm in LSM 9 or 10. I'm getting this because I'm a young black woman. It can be very patronizing and can do damage if it's not done properly, right?
That, of course, is not a recent phenomenon. I don't think marketers have ever treated any of their clients, I'm talking big companies now, as individuals. And I think they're going to battle to do that. I think there are ways, and I think technology offers them those ways that make you feel rather special.
Mm-hmm.
There are companies I know that have mobile groups of consumers that they're doing research with that will give them the most secretive, private information about themselves, their personal health, for instance, because they believe they're giving back to research that will help others who perhaps will suffer from the same condition they have. And they're prepared to share that information and then go back to an individual, they think, mm-hmm. and say, why haven't you asked me any questions this week? I'm ready to talk some more. I've been thinking more about the way I should offer. And those are small groups which researchers are using now to find information from and give some stuff back to.
Isn't that the that's the big end game, isn't it?
I think it is. And of course, that's also technology helping the role of how it should be done. But behind that, you have to have ethical organizations who understand what they're doing, whether this is marketing or research houses, and be able to use that information for the good that it says it's going to, rather than to perhaps sell on that database to somebody else to sell them something, which, of course, has been done a lot over the years and is still being done. You can buy databases all over the place now that have even got information on you, on your financial position, for instance, going backwards, and you can buy those databases.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of people who are moaning and complaining about privacy, and we'll never get it back, and privacy is still going to be the most valuable thing that you can have in the future. But actually, I mean, that game's already been lost. And to be pedantic about your privacy almost seems naive now. I mean, people know enough. Everybody's got your phone number. It's not hard. If someone calls me and I don't know who it is, I can go onto Truecaller and look them up. If someone is you know, sending me an email, I can Google them and find out 500 things about them, which before would have been impossible to know. So actually, we've all surrendered some privacy for what we hoped would be a much more efficient universe in the future. But the real story here is that all of this information still needs processing, and it still needs to be valuable in some way. So how are marketers, PR people, advertisers, media businesses, how are they benefiting from all of this information?
Well, there's two. I'd like to go back to what you said. There certainly is a lot of naivety. Young people that I speak to, and I'm not just lumping them together, who perhaps are not identifying and agreeing that this is fake news and I don't understand it.
Yeah.
When you say to them, but why did you give so-and-so all that information about yourself without checking them out, because it's so easy to check people, either they didn't think about it, or because the speed of which of everything is happening, they just fill in forms and give information away and type away and give their details to people. And the oldest example I can think of, it has been used for years, are competitions. They tell you that you can win a trip to wherever, but you've got to fill in all this information. And it's a lot of stuff they then can put into a database and then send stuff to you to sell you something else. And then they say, how did they get this? Well, I've said, well, it's all out there anyway, but you keep giving them that specific information and then signing a silly little thing at the bottom that says that, you know,
you give permission for it to be distributed.
And of course, I can tell you that all the big banks, insurance companies, everybody is getting you to tick a block. And then there's small print, and at the bottom it says, if you haven't ticked every block, you're still giving us this. There's a lot of manipulation and makes people afraid now, I think. There's been quite a lot of fear expressed by people that, but I didn't give that information. Yes, but you did. In clause 63.1, it says that you're willing to disclose this.
Yeah.
I mean, even your medical history, you've got to know that your medical aid has everything on you.
Yeah.
But if you go to a doctor, they're meant to ask you if they can access the information and get you to sign.
Yeah.
And you do, because you think that it's all going to be for the good. And heaven knows what happens when it all gets back from whichever doctor you happen to be using to a central point. That is valuable information for those medical aides in terms of what they're going to offer you or not offer you.
But people are even volunteering information about their relationships, their children, their situation with their father or their mother, whether or not they met with someone for dinner last night. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that the CIA used to have to be employed to do. Is this why people are suspicious of Facebook and Google and even WhatsApp and Instagram to a lesser degree? Because suddenly you don't really own anything when it comes to your own information. You don't. You're giving it all away without even being aware of it.
I think there's been a level of hubris in that giving away of stuff. You know, people bragging, I get 73,000 likes, I've got 40,000 followers, and people, we're doing it, we're ranking people in terms of, and of course, radio personalities, television personalities, media personalities generally have high profiles and number of Twitter followers, for instance.
That's also because they're whoring themselves out.
Yeah. And then what do you do with it? I just keep saying, you press likes and everybody says, I got 30 likes, and I said, from who and what does it mean? There's no context.
Yeah.
So it's become quite flippant, and I think we're going to have to move away from that. I think the world will have to move away to see how dangerous it's become when you share such intimate information about your family and where you are and when your kids have just left the house to go to school.
If you stood naked on the Grayston Bridge, you'd also get lots of likes and attention in terms of eyeballs on you,
perhaps,
right?
Perhaps not me, but perhaps.
No, well, listen, I don't know. I think maybe, Sandra, anybody who stood naked on the Grayston Bridge would get lots of eyeballs. It doesn't mean that they're important people or that they're necessarily the kind of person that Pick and Pay want to have on their next ad campaign. That's what's hard for advertisers to figure out, right? Is figuring out the difference between attention, getting attention, and having real influence.
I think so. And that comes down to good research. And I think we've got one of the best research industries in the world. It's world class.
Really? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, a lot of them are owned by international groups, like AC Nielsen, for instance, as a group across the world and can measure all sorts of things. But if you look at the small and what I call medium-sized and even South African-owned research houses, they do things very ethically. They all sign codes of conduct, and they ask you if you want to respond, and they tell you how long it's going to take, and they tell you what's going to happen with it. And I have not yet met a proper research company in this country that isn't doing it well. They went through a stage where people were getting databases, and I took a few of these to task, and it seems to – it's about 4 years ago. They would buy a database from something like the National Blood Donors Association of South Africa, which I think – I'm a blood donor, so I give my details to them in good faith because I think it's good. And then I discover that I'm now getting mailed, offering me a competition, which I start – you know, I start answering these questions, the most personal questions, about my sexual relationship, and I was gobsmacked.
Jesus.
So we took them apart on our site, and they pulled it out. But you see the things that people go through because they think, quick fix, money, make money, get databases.
With and also databases, this make hunger money. For every bit of information, which isn't necessarily relevant.
Yeah. So I found myself, I don't think I've activated my Twitter. I think I launched it 9 years ago, and I probably looked at it again about 3 years ago when my colleagues would say, come on, Sandra, start it again. I just found it too much, too much all the time.
It can be overwhelming.
I find it very overwhelming.
And people refer to this as the clutter, right, this constant barrage of messages that we're sent by media agencies, advertisers, billboards, newspaper, radio, television. Those are the traditional ones. And then you've now got social media, and you've got this remorseless flow of stuff onto a screen which people are paying more attention to than their own loved ones.
Indeed.
It's the first thing they look at when they wake up in the
morning. And it's frightening. And the last thing they look at in the
night. They fall asleep with it smashing into their face at night.
It takes discipline not to do that.
There is a world that I suppose you're not going to get to, but most of the world that you'll get to is through this screen.
Indeed.
So if you're not on a phone, you really aren't going to be as effective in media, PR, advertising, marketing.
It's true, and I think that consumers feel isolated, and that fear of missing out thing comes into play. And I think that the disciplines that parents, for instance, are going to have to apply to their children who are addicted to small screens by the age of 4.
Yeah.
And just that discipline, which as children I had as a child, is that there was a discipline that you had to go out and play in the garden from 2 until 5 in the afternoon, or else you just sat around reading books and playing Monopoly. So children can be lazy.
Yeah.
So it's just now that it's so difficult. I think being an adult now with children would be very, very difficult. And I also want to just touch on the social media thing. I have a lot of clients and speak to a lot of marketing people who keep on about, but we must have social media. And when I say, what do you mean we must have it? No, it's got to be part. The board is saying to me, our board of directors, the exco is saying to me, I must include social media in my budgeting. And I go, okay, well, just explain what you're trying to do. You have a database, say, of potential students, of matric students who are coming out, and you've got really good courses you want to sell to them. You've got a great database as it is, and now you're going to start sending them information. these guys. And they're going to get little snippets of information, cute little pictures, and maybe some videos, and they're going to like it, and they're going to open it, and maybe they read it, and you can see how much time they spend on it. And then does that convert them into buying the course? No, no, not at all. 80% of our referrals come through word of mouth. So I said, but then surely that's social media. No, we are talking people who've done courses with us, who then say to a colleague, Gareth, I did a course with that organization. It was superb.
You must go with them. Yeah.
Go with them. So now I'm seeing a switch where people are relying, as we used to do, on a person who says, that restaurant, Sandra, you can't hear yourself think. You can't have a decent meal. The music's pumping. It's not for you. It's great. It's in. The food's good. The chef wanders around. But it's not aimed at you, but you read the likes and the loves and the comments and you say, this is for me. But I would say to you, Gareth, that is not for you.
That's interesting because that's, that, as you say, going back to basics here, is that word of mouth is still the most powerful way for anything.
And understanding that we're all still human beings. I think we lost a little bit of it for a while, that we became likes and dislikes and Twitter followers and Facebook fans. And I'm not saying there isn't a role for it. That is changing. That's been the most dramatic change last year, was the change in the Facebook thing.
In other words, that people are also starting to realize that what happens on Twitter and Facebook isn't true.
And isn't necessarily meaningful and is not necessarily going to change my life for the better.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You've measured that change. That's phenomenal.
Yeah,
I mean, that really is interesting.
It's happening a lot. And that's why I say the rest of the world is probably 18 months ahead of us, because they do a lot of consistent marketing research into these channels that they can or cannot decide to use.
So, Sia, as our millennial spokesperson, I mean, do you find that people are less attached to the meaning of social media than they were like a year or two ago? What Sandra's saying effectively here.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had a bit of a light bulb moment in analyzing last year and the changes that have been in the industry. And I think what you're saying is correct, that we did go through a bit of a phase where it was about social media and it was about followers and it was about, you know, the number, which is not that human aspect. And you look at now where we even have terms like micro influencers and macro influencers. It isn't about how many numbers you have. It's about what sort of engagement.
Quality.
Yeah, it's the quality over the quantity. So
do you think that last year was a year for people to unfollow and for people to unsubscribe and to be much more judicious about what they choose to consume? Both of you.
Last year, and I think it's still continuing.
It's ongoing.
You see people who are getting off social media.
I think last year was pivotal in starting the revolution, if you like, and that started, in my view, with the Facebook drama, with releasing data that they shouldn't have, and then having to admit that they didn't know they'd released it, and maybe they didn't know and they released it anyway. And suddenly everybody thought that Facebook had been a friend. And a nice friend and a companion. And suddenly it was a slightly dangerous one.
And when Zuckerberg had to appear in front of Congress, and although he did a good job of acquitting himself in front of a really illiterate audience in terms of representatives of the US political body, what he did do was he showed that he's not to be trusted.
Yeah, he controls an enormous organization. At one time, people were saying that he would be a future president of the United States, and that was his ambition.
And we must never forget, he's doing what he's doing to make Facebook succeed, not to make individuals who are subscribers.
Indeed. And if you look at his history, and you saw the movie.
Oh, yes. Crafty little bastard.
Yeah, crafty.
So, Sandra, someone's just messaged me here and said, can Sandra please touch on how much local ad spend is going to Google and Facebook? Because I think that's something a lot of people don't understand about the media business, is that local people make up such a tiny percentage of what massive spend. You talked about 50 billion rand. Lost to local media. So it's Maggie who asks this question.
It's difficult to tell because although they're ubiquitous, Google in particular, Amazon, whoever, they don't release the numbers of value that they're getting. You can see the number of... So you'd have to do it by agency spend, which, of course, once again, is difficult to measure. It's much easier to measure ad spend on radio and television, and we've got benchmarks that go back decades. this is still very much in its infancy. But I would reckon in the UK it's massive. It's now it's like 50% apparently. Well, really? Digital. So digital is amorphous. It's like saying screens rather than television and mobile. They're saying it's up to 50%, and the UK is very advanced in the uptake of digital media generally. I would imagine that in South Africa it's edging towards the 20-22% mark. Now you put that into billions.
Of total ad spend.
Yeah.
That's enormous.
It is enormous.
And of digital ad spend?
I think, well, no, that is including that whole digital
ad spend.
No,
but if you had to separate out the digital category, which as you say is amorphous, it's difficult to figure this out, but in digital ad spend, what share of that is going to Facebook and Google?
Oh, the bulk.
Yeah.
Oh, by far the bulk.
So that's squeezing even the digital players in South Africa.
And this money does not touch the shore and goes overseas. And there's all the tax dramas, you know, how Google was sued because of, you know, they're in a tax haven. And I can't remember the numbers, but were they mind-boggling billions of dollars that they had to pay because they weren't paying taxation in certain areas. So it's not good for our country, and it's a side issue that this revenue is leaving our shores. But the marketers are demanding it, and they're demanding more measurement on it, and they're getting it. You do get reaction to Google ads. There's no doubt if you have the right message and it's put in the right space, Google ads work.
No, we're not debating that it's not effective. I think that's fair, but a lot of it is probably not as effective as a local content creation solution might be. I mean, because local, we know, works. Where people like local languages, they like local stories, they like local people.
Well, let's come back to that, because I'm a great believer in that. That's why community radio, when it's well run, does exceptionally well. And they've got wonderful little databases, and their social media platforms are lively. So of all the media types, if I digress just slightly, that I think is going to benefit the most from the digital revolution. First of all, it was out of home because they digitized their boards. It wasn't digital advertising. They digitized their distribution. So that boosted them. I think radio is going to benefit from it because of that intimate and understood and trusted relationship that radio has with consumers.
But particularly you're talking about community radio.
Not only.
Are you talking about the big broadcasters as well?
No, but I am talking about the ones, you know, the dial. I switch about 9 radio stations a day, even on my journey here. And there's 3 or 4 community stations in there.
Yeah.
Because I have choice now. And even though they're not as sophisticated, or they're certainly getting that way, I have a trust issue with them. I think it's really, I trust them.
Well, that's interesting. So you can have many of those relationships then.
Yes, indeed. And switch a lot, which everybody's doing with radio.
It's not monogamous.
No, not monogamous, like most relationships that you and I know.
Wow. What are your most exciting prospects in terms of media? I mean, you can look at this now with a bird's eye view because you've seen so much change and you're at the forefront of discovering new things that are going on in media without attributing too much value to them. What are you excited about? What's next?
Lots of experimentation. Buzzword last year, and it's continuing to this year with alacrity, is activations and events, call them what you will.
Yes.
So you'll get a huge bank deciding to switch a lot of their media, traditional media spend, into sponsoring things, which in the hope that they, and sometimes truthfully, will get an opportunity to shake the hand of the person who really interested in their bank, their whatever it is, insurance company. So a lot of spend is moving into that space. It's been there, but it's grown like topsy. You see event suppliers and organizers of events becoming award events, special events, conferences. There's lots on the radar screen. I think there's going to be a kickback to that probably next year or the year after, because companies that are sending their staff on these things, if they're not coming back with real value, they've not only had to pay to send them, they've also had to spend time there. So a day out of the office for a media agency person is expensive. And then they're having to fork out 4,000 rand for the day. So unless, once again, we come back to your point, Gareth, unless the content is very carefully thought out, unless the reason for that awards event's existence is carefully explained and evaluated all the time, it will lose its meaning, and the consumer of whoever it is will lose interest in it. So it's another media, it's another touch point that's come into the fore, and now it's a kickback also to that alienation of people from each other because of screens and devices. So we want to network like we used to. We want to shake hands. We want to feel part of a community that isn't through a screen, that is real. I'm spending more and more time with my family and close friends than I've ever done, and I've always been a person who mixes easily.
Yeah.
And colleagues. I'm trying to visit more people than I've ever done because I want to see the face and hear it. And so that's been a kickback on that. So now events activations are getting really big. The 10-second video that's been announced recently by YouTube to get a message across is an answer to who watches those silly little YouTube videos that go on for 10 minutes about you should be using our product and you should be using it now.
Nobody. But how many people even watch that pre-roll? It's 3 seconds.
But how illogical were the marketers or the makers of those things to think that in this day and age you could hold somebody's attention for even 2 minutes? So now this 10-second video I think is very exciting. But it depends on how the advertising industry uses that to convey a message. Because 10 seconds is not long.
No.
But if you're really clever, and you will watch a video to the end if it's really clever. There was a brilliant one about Theresa May and Brexit. And there was an ad at the end. It's got to be the most brilliant little shortish video with an ad tagged it, appropriate and wonderfully done. Thing that I've seen for ages.
I'll just look at it. I haven't seen that.
I'll send it to you.
Cool.
Because the ad industry still has a role to play. Creativity and
Absolutely.
Great ideas and big ideas that work and are well constructed and distributed to the right audience is the way. It's the way of capitalism. It's a cornerstone of capitalism. It's a way of communication, which is a cornerstone of being a human being. So it's not going to go anywhere. It's just going to have to evolve. So even my friends who are writing copy, people who are writing books, I can't read very thick books now. I'm skipping pages, which I've never done before. You watch a series. I'm finding movies a little bit too long. They should have edited it out a bit in the middle. And I'm not seeing a 20-plus years old millennial.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing it, I'm saying I'm suspicious. So I'm much more choosy about what I read, what I listen to, what I watch, and it's just not a pig out
for
me now.
Your time is at an absolute premium like never before.
Well,
in the days where we had two or three TV channels, they could hold you with boring programming for hours. Now, there's no chance in hell they'll be able to keep your attention.
No. I'm finding rugby games too long, football far too long, and I mean, this is crazy stuff. It's crazy stuff. And I think at my age, if I'm fear, I hate to think what you're finding too long. It is, and that's why they think of maybe, you know, shorter golf games would also be great. You know, I was a great golfer, but it's 18 holes, it's four
it's
and a
long
half
time.
Hours.
Yeah.
I'm kind of playing less and less now because I'm thinking, what else can I do?
Wow.
So the choices are immense, and that's what technology's done. It's offered us these choices. So we're all going through a stage of trying to find out what is best for us, what makes us feel safe, what makes us feel happy and part of something. And media has an amazing role to play. It always has, but I think it's got an even more important one now. And it, with the fake news angles and what I read today about, you know, the Zonda Commission. I mean, surveys become the Gupta of the media industry overnight. Well, we all knew this.
Yes.
But it's now coming out. And that is not good for media.
No.
Where you hear that people are being bribed, it is not good for media. But generally speaking, the media in this country has a lot to be proud of in terms of the Fourth Estate. And I'm sure you agree with that, Gareth.
I do. I'm just delighted to have had the opportunity to pick your brain for a little bit and to share your own insights into how the whole system is changing and how it's working and what is and what isn't, frankly. And also cast some aspersions at some of these things that are suspicious, that deserve to be interrogated a little bit more. It's a pleasure to have you here, Sandra. Thank you.
Thank you, Gareth. All the very best.
Sandra Gordon. It is 25 minutes to 9. Coming up a little later on cliffcentral.com, the Unview and plenty more. Stick around for that. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9 o'clock.
This is cliffcentral.com.